Ruth chapter 4, verse 14. Then the women said to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord, who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him." Then Naomi took the child, laid him on her lap, and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. So we enter now into the life of Ruth. What we have in Ruth, or the way I've been thinking about this book, is it's like that weekday morning news show. And they would have that little segment at the end of the news show where they would have the host stand and they would put a map behind. And they wanted to get people's stories. They wanted to get stories from the people, from real people of America. And so the host would stand there and he would have a map and he would take a dart and he would sling the dart behind him, right? I don't know how you throw a dart backwards, but he managed to do it and not hit anyone. And that dart would land on the map on some city or close to a city, and they would select that city in the United States. And then they would open up a phone book from that city, and they would run their finger down randomly, and they would select a person. Have you ever seen any of the shows like this where they try and randomly? I mean, because you can pick people that you know have a good story and get them to tell their story, but they wanted to show that every person has a story worth hearing, and this is how they would sort of randomize that process. And Ruth is sort of like taking a dart and throwing it into the period of the judges and pulling out this story of a young lady and her family and gazing into what is going on in this period of time. Have you read the book of Judges lately? I don't know that you could rate it PG-13. I think it would be worse than that. There's some really awful things that go on in the book of Judges. And then you come to the book of Ruth, the bridge before we get to the greatness of King David. But I was thinking about this scenario and how the book of Ruth is a view into the life of these individuals. What if you threw a dart and you selected a family and you interviewed them at a certain time in their life, right? And then say you, 10 years later, you threw a dart again and it hit in the same place and your finger landed on the same family and you went back to them 10 years later. You think their story would be the same? Are you the same person you were 10 years ago? Will you be the same person today that you are going to be 10 years from now? The same people, but their stories change over time. Now, we just read the end of the book of Ruth, so we know it's a happy ending. You know, she's the grandfather of David, and David is Jesus is the son of David, so it's a happy ending. Close the book. Let's get outside and enjoy the sun, right? But God gives us this story for a reason, okay? God looks and he sees the whole picture of Ruth's life. He doesn't just select one little portion, but he sees the whole picture, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and he, for whatever reason, thinks it's important that we see the whole picture as well. God sees people, and he sees their whole story, not just a part of their story. And he intends for that story to mean something, and for their best days to always be ahead of them. So I want to throw some darts into the life of Ruth, and I want us to see how the same family, over a period of time, looks vastly different, depending on when you look into the family and get their story. And yet God's purpose remains the same. Let's go back to chapter 1 in Ruth. Ruth chapter 1, verse 1. "In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land. And a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, and the name of his two sons were Malchon and Chilion. They were Ephrathites from Bethlehem in Judah. They went into the country of Moab and remained there. So you have this young family, and in these two verses, stop for a moment with me and consider how much of their life story has already been told. What do we know about Elimelech? He's a man, and somehow he got hitched with this woman, Naomi. Is that not a big story? The meeting of two people, aren't those the kind of stories that you love to hear? Tell us, how did you meet each other? How did that happen? All of us have a story like that, whether it's our parents or whether it's us or whether it's someone we know. Elimelech, whose name means "My God is King," and Naomi, whose name means "Pleasant." What a wonderful unification there. And they come together and they get married, and they're Israelites, which means they're God's people. And so that's a happy story. They're Ephrathites, which just means that they're connected with the 12 tribes of Israel. They're supposed to go out and be fruitful, and have they been fruitful? How much fruit have they had? Right? They have two sons, Malhon and Chilion. Now, how about that for a moment in their life? We don't know about their marriage, but then they have these two children. Yeah, children don't change your life, right? That's not a big deal. That doesn't change the way you see things and interact with the world. We've gone through their marriage, and we've gone through the coming of these children. And where are they going? It says they left the land, which is Israel, and they went out to Moab. Why? There was a famine in the land, and so they're married, and then they're relocating to find better times, getting away from hardship, economic or physical or whatever, and they start this new family. It sounds like an awful lot of common stories. Probably every single Alaskan, right? You head for Alaska for better times, and suddenly you have a family, and wow, we've been here 30 years. Where did the time go? What a wonderful story of a little family. And yet this little family lives in a pretty dark time, the time of the judges. Turn a page back, or maybe it's on the same page, but go back to Judges 21, verse 25. Again, the judges is not PG-13 stuff. This is a really ugly time. And the reason is because, Judges 21, 25, in those days there was no king in Israel. Everyone did what was right in his own eyes. Everyone did what they thought was best or what they wanted, which sounds like a wonderful idea until what I want disagrees with what Nister wants, and we go at it and we fight over it. Chapter 4 in the book of Judges, the soldier judge Deborah comes up to the king and says, "Hey, God needs you to go out and fight these people." And he's unwilling to lead, a man unwilling to lead. And he says, "Well, I'll go if you'll go. I'll go if you'll hold my hand and go with me." Sad story of a man unwilling to lead. The glory won't go to him, but it goes to an obscure woman who ends up sticking a tent peg into a guy's forehead, right? There's a story for you to pay attention to. Flip over a few more chapters to chapters 8 and to chapters 16. 8 is about Gideon, who does some really wonderful things, but he has this flawed legacy of this thing that he sets up, and people end up giving glory to him and to this shrine rather than to Gideon. And then you have Samson, strong, mighty, powerful man who does good things for the Lord, but he can't control how he acts towards women. He starts chasing women and treating them with disgrace and disrespect. Keep going a couple more chapters to chapter 19. Some really horrific deeds that lead to a civil war amongst the people. We start to realize in Ruth chapter 1 that the famine that is coming upon the people of Israel is not an accident. This isn't a random act of nature. God said back in Deuteronomy, "If you are not faithful to me, then the land will be cursed. And the work that you do with the land will be cursed." And we find that Israel is living with the consequences. The story of the judges, rebellion and punishment and pleading and rescue, round and round it goes. And yet there's this little bright spot of this little family who goes to Moab, and they're trying to make it, and they're trying to do things the right way. What if that's where you threw the dart? You threw the dart into this story of this family who goes off into Moab. They sojourn there, and that's just the end. You've got a happy wife, you've got a faithful husband, they have these nice, strong men, and it's happily ever after, right? Can you imagine back when you were young and your family had just started and you had moved to a new place and there was excitement? And now you look back on that and you kind of cringe because you know life is about to happen to these people. It's good and it's nice, but we all know that life doesn't always treat us well. There's difficult times ahead. Is God finished with them? You know, an outsider might look at this family and say, they've got it all figured out. Be ignorant of the fact that there is much to come. There are lessons yet to be learned, and there is support that they will need. Let's continue reading in chapter 3. This is the same family, okay? 10 years later, this family looks almost nothing like what it looked like of what we just read. Something tragic happens in verse 3. If I said chapter 3, I meant verse 3. Ruth 1, verse 3. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died, and she was left with her two sons. Within 10 years, this same family is drastically changed. Now today, we don't have time to get into the how. How do you deal with the loss of a parent? How do you deal with the loss of a spouse? We don't have time to get into the how of that in this lesson now. But what does it mean to lose a parent? I mean, I guess we all know that we're going to lose our parents someday, but does that make it easy when that day actually comes? How about the loss of a spouse? Does that have a profound impact upon your life and upon your faith? I mean, obviously, you get married and you know someone has to die first, but it still doesn't make it easy to live through that. It is inevitable, but it is unexpected, and it is difficult. And this once secure family that sojourned in the land of Moab is now dealing with some serious issues. But then we move on into the next phase of their life. These took Moabite wives. So Mahlon and Chilion take Moabite wives. The name of one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And they lived there about 10 years. Israelites marrying Moabites. Now that's a big deal for your children to grow up and to go off and to marry people. Boy, who are they going to find? I hope it's a good person. I hope it's a faithful person. Can you let go of them once they leave the house? Robert just had a lesson on the leaving and the cleaving and the becoming one flesh. That's all a huge step. And right after the loss of the father, these two sons go off and marry Moabite women. Well, what does it mean to be a Moabite? Genesis chapter 19. Consider if your sons went off and this was the legacy of the women who they were getting involved with. Now, this doesn't mean this is the character of Ruth and Orpah. It just means this is their family history. Genesis 19, you remember Lot? Lot went off into Sodom and Gomorrah and he got riled up there with the wrong crowd. And then he left and his wife was turned to salt. And it was just Lot and his two daughters. Genesis 19:33. So the daughters made their father drink wine that night, and the firstborn went in and lay with her father. He did not know when she lay down or when she arose. The next day, the firstborn said to the younger, "Behold, I lay last night with my father. Let us make him drink wine tonight also. Then you go in and lie with him, that we may preserve offspring from our father." So they made their father drink wine that night, and the younger arose and lay with him, and he did not know when she lay down or when she arose. Thus both the daughters of Lot became pregnant by their father. The firstborn bore a son and called his name Moab. He is the father of the Moabites to this day. There's certainly a lot more to that story, but Moabite is not a name that you wanted attached with your family heritage. And these are the women that the sons are going off and getting involved with. Deuteronomy 23 goes even farther and says that you shall not marry a Moabite wife. And if you do, a Moabite is not to be in the sanctuary even to the 10th generation. So what do you do with Ruth the Moabite, with this type of legacy and this type of animosity towards her? But in this transition period in their life, it's not over yet. Verse 5, guess what happens next? And both Mahlon and Chilion died, so that the woman was left without her two sons and her husband. We've already been through the loss of a parent and the loss of a spouse, and now what do they have to endure? The loss of a spouse and the unthinkable, the loss of children. Don't forget, this is the same family that sojourned out as mom and dad and two sons seeking a better life. And now, same family, we're left with three widows seemingly lost in grief. What if the story ended here? What if this is where you threw the dart into their life and you were listening to them tell this story? An outsider might sit back and say, what a sad story. What a depressing family story. If only we had known back then, maybe we could have done something for them. It seems as though victory has been swallowed up in defeat. The question remains, is God finished? What does God see? Does he see that young, spry family that was seeking better opportunity? Or is he going to focus on the loss? Has he brought them to this point to leave them there? Ruth chapter 4, verse 13. We come to the next dart that we've thrown into this picture. And again, imagine how different this family is now. Ruth 4, verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. Well, wait a minute. What was she just a minute ago? She was a widow who was a Moabite. And all of a sudden, fast forward through all of the action in the story, and suddenly she has married this man named Boaz. That's not a big deal. Against all odds, one widow remarries and the family changes again. Ruth 3, verse 11. Notice how Boaz describes Ruth. Verse 11 in chapter 3. And now, my daughter, do not fear. I will do for you all that you ask, for all my fellow townsmen know that you are a worthy woman. This woman who was first a Moabite, and then she was a widow, and now suddenly she's being described as a worthy woman. This is the same phrase from Proverbs 31, the kind of woman that is described in that text there. But Ruth didn't just end up with some dude, some any old guy. Ruth chapter 2, verse 1. Now Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. What an incredible change of events. And if we had stopped at any prior point, if we had focused on the story, we would have never got to the point at which this family has been redeemed. The woman who had a checkered legacy and who lost her husband and was destitute, suddenly she's married to a worthy man, and she is a worthy woman. And what did we read at the end of Ruth chapter 4? She becomes the grandmother of King David, the greatest king of all of Israel, a type of the Messiah to come. Not only is she the grandmother of King David, what do you read about Ruth at the beginning of Matthew? She's in the lineage of Christ. You might think God really wouldn't want anything to do with a person who's been through this much in their life and who's been raked through all of this difficult time and who has such a checkered past. And yet there she is, a part of the legacy of the Messiah. What if the story had picked up at Ruth and Boaz, right? What if they threw the dart and they came to Ruth and Boaz and they said, tell us your story. And they said, well, you know, our ancestors moved from Israel and they came to Moab. And then everything was wiped out. The family was wiped out. And then they tell them the story about how awesome it was that they met. And now we know that they're the grandparents of these wonderful people. And you would hear this story and think, man, that story is incredible. I could never live up to that kind of story. They must have always had things figured out. They must have always had faith like that. People must have always said that you're going to turn out okay. And yet this is the same family that we look back before and we would say, I don't know if they're going to turn out okay. Or I think you guys have already got it good enough. We're not going to interject in your life anymore. Suddenly, the naive couple and the tragic widows are now this wonderful example of faith. I think it's amazing that we know all of the family secrets. This is an amazing family, but we know their past, the good and the bad. This is the same family, but it looks very different. If all we focused on was this grandparent legacy of faith, we might see unattainable perfection. But through the eyes of faith, God reveals that He is interested in the whole story, and He has used the whole story of Ruth to change the course of the world. He has used her to make an incredible impact. So what about us? Why is Ruth significant to us today? Why is this story significant? Why should we care about a little four-chapter book hidden away in the middle of the Old Testament when they used to do things differently? Are you going to name your daughter Orpah? That's kind of a weird name. I mean, there's things in here that don't exactly seem to apply. And yet we have this book, and it has great significance to us. Ruth's story is significant, first of all, because it is Christ-like. Think about Ruth's behavior. Now, God's providence is littered through this book. There's even times in this book where it'll say that Ruth just happened to come to the right place. You think it's an accident? You think she just happened to go to the field of Boaz and to meet him and to run into him? God's providence is littered throughout this book, and yet it is Ruth's spiritual commitment that is demonstrated clearly by her godly living. Ruth, despite being a new believer and from being outside, is spiritually committed. And how does she demonstrate it? She demonstrates it through her godly life. Her godly life impacts those closest to her. Did Ruth convert every single Moabite? Did Ruth convert every single Israelite? No, the greatest impact Ruth had was on those who were closest to her. She helped those who she was connected to glorify God. Sometimes that's the hardest people to influence. We can travel the world preaching the gospel, and yet we still have to go home to our family and minister and serve and help them to glorify God. And Ruth does that so beautifully. But her method, notice her method. It is service, and it is sacrifice. And as Steve so wonderfully laid out for us today, it is submission. Listen to me here. There is no lack of strength in sacrifice. There is no lack of strength in true submission. There is no lack of strength in true service. It takes the strongest people to live a life like Ruth did. This roller coaster that Ruth goes up and down on, it's a wonderful example of how you make it through that. There's love and there's tenderness and there's romance in their story, and yet you don't get away from the fact that there's truth. Ruth can't just live any old way. She has to be a worthy woman, and she has to abide by God's truth. It's not okay just to be a good person. If you're not connected with God, and if ultimately you're not connected with Christ in the way that Christ would teach us, then that life's not going to have any significance in the end. Ruth is significant because her example is Christ-like, but it is also significant because her life is Christ-linked. It is linked intimately with Christ. How does God transition from the darkness of the judges to the glory of David? Think about it. If you were writing a story and you wrote this really dark chapter in the life of people and you suddenly had to transition into David, who is the greatest king of all time, how do you make that transition? Do you pick a foreign woman who's a widow to be the hero of your story? And yet someone needed to be the transition generation. Someone needed to take a stand and say, whatever has happened in the past and whatever is happening all around me, my legacy is going to be different than everything that's going on. You ever wonder if David, as he would read through the history, and he would think about Grandma Ruth, and he would say, that's where it changed, when Ruth took a stand, and Ruth was obedient to God. And because of her decision to be the transition person, I am who I am today. If God can preserve and redeem a family like Ruth's, then is there any family that God cannot use? Think carefully on the life of Ruth, and it is as beautiful and as ugly as any life gets, and yet God redeems and uses it. Will he do any less for us? But Ruth is most significant because she is tied directly to the lineage of Jesus. If God can use Ruth as a part of his plan for salvation, then is there anyone that he can't use? Realize, Ruth is not just the grandmother of King David. Ruth is our spiritual ancestor as well. We all have a Grandma Ruth. We can all look back to Ruth and see her story as an inspiration to us and as a model for us to carry forward in our life. I'd like us to walk away today understanding that God sees the whole person. As long as there is breath, as long as you are alive, God can take your whole story and make something good from it. God sees the whole person. Wherever you're at today, if you're like Ruth was early in their life, or if you're at a point of despair where you're suffering through loss and difficulty, or if you're the grandparents establishing that wonderful legacy, remember, God's best days for you are always ahead. I hope 10 years from now, God is continuing to use you. I hope he's using you now, but I hope he is continuing to use you and mold your family and your legacy to his glory. God intends for our best days to be ahead of us. God is willing to see you as a whole person. Are you willing to accept all of him? If there's any needs in the church today, the church is here to glorify God, to proclaim the truth of his kingdom and his salvation, and to reach out to the lost. If we can help you in any of those pursuits, please come forward and let's stand and sing together.